This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. During his campaign, President Trump repeatedly voiced his distrust of the national unemployment numbers, calling them total fiction and hoax. He's not alone in questioning those numbers. A new survey by a British polling company shows most Americans are distrustful of statistics released by the U.S. government. But the degree of skepticism varies widely along party lines. According to a recent YouGov survey, a little over half of Democrats do trust government numbers, while only a quarter of Republicans think government statistics are reliable. Mona Chalabi is a data editor with The Guardian U.S. She uses reporting, public outreach, and hand-drawn illustrations to connect the public with data. She recently gave a talk at NC State University and joins us now. Mona, welcome. Good to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start with this new poll. It sounds like Americans in general don't trust statistics, although it does kind of divide along party lines. What do you make of this?
I don't think it's massively surprising, to be honest. The first thing that I would say about it is that there's a bit of a temptation to be quite simplistic about this and say that distrust has perhaps gone up partly because we have a president and an administration which is publicly sceptical of these statistics. But I think that explanation is a bit too simplistic because the same YouGov survey was also conducted back in January 2015 when obviously we had a very different administration, and the results were very, very consistent with the results we've seen more recently.
So there we go, a kind of mistrust. And also what to make of these party lines. I mean, number one, a huge difference between Democrats and Republicans, and yet Half of the Democrats also don't believe the government. I mean, so I don't know exactly what to make of that.
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to data literacy, perhaps. So I think part of the reason why a lot of Americans are slightly distrustful of these numbers is because they don't necessarily make sense to them. They are simply given these numbers and then given the choice, which is believe them or don't believe them. Very often the methodologies are super opaque. And so that, I think, also helps us to understand why the responses differ along party lines as well. Because when you don't have the tools to be able to understand the methodology, you're left with one question, which is, do I trust the source? And because Republicans tend to have a different relationship with the idea of government itself, that might explain why Democrats make that leap and they just say, OK, I'm more likely to just take these statistics on face value.
All right. So there we go. Now, you've talked about literacy and you just mentioned it again and sort of understanding what's in the data, where it came from. And you take as an example, a poll that a very provocative poll that was recently released that showed that something like 40-41% of Muslims polled believed in a jihad, were jihadist or supported jihadism.
Right. And my job as a data journalist, when numbers come out like that, is to really, really investigate how they were collected and not simply take them at face value. So in that particular poll, I looked for a couple of things. I looked at how many people actually surveyed. And I think if I remember correctly, the poll had about 300 respondents. It might have been slightly more. That's incredibly low, especially when you consider there are about 3 million Muslims living in America. So 300 isn't a great sample size. The next thing is to find out, how did the pollster contact those Muslims? And this was an opt-in poll, which meant that anyone could have found it on the internet and completed it. There's no way of even knowing if the people who filled that out really identified as Muslim. Third thing is, who conducted this poll? This was conducted by a survey company which is owned or was owned by Kellyanne Conway, who you, I'm sure, are well aware
of.
I'm very familiar with.
And
then the last thing as well is to, you know, find the results and really, really dig through them. And a later question in that same survey also asked the respondents to define jihad. And a larger share of the respondents simply said it's Muslims' peaceful personal struggle to be more religious. So if they support that, is that necessarily a really frightening finding?
Well, there was also another question down the line that said, you know, who defines it as outright violence against non-Muslims? And that was a much smaller percentage.
Exactly. And the thing that's really important is those two percentages might not even overlap. So let's say 10% define it as a violent struggle and 40% support it. There's no way of knowing if those two groups overlap at all. Perhaps those that define it as violent also say they don't support it.
So that's one way in which we as consumers of polls or data could be more mindful and a little bit more critical about what we're looking at. But
sure,
this really falls on journalists, I think, more. It seems to me that the weight falls more heavily on journalists to understand what's in that poll and who put it out. And this is a point that you make over and over again.
Absolutely. I take full responsibility for communicating numbers in an accurate and an honest way. And to go back to something which I think has really changed the American public's relationship with data, I think that the way that polls were communicated in this election was highly irresponsible journalism. So I take, for example, the homepage of the website 538. I should say that I actually worked for that website for about a year and a half, and I left shortly before the election. And Americans who went to that website saw in very large numbers at the top of the site the probabilities of each candidate winning. And we know that a lot of people did go and visit that site. The site had over 16 million visitors on November 8th alone. And the thing that's really important about that is that those numbers were miscommunicated to the public. To have put decimal places on the probability of either candidate winning, knowing full well that those probabilities are actually highly inaccurate, was just misleading. As journalists, their responsibility was actually to communicate a range. They should have said, we believe that Hillary Clinton will win between X and Y electoral college votes, or we think that her probability of winning is between X and Y. But instead, there's the assumption that the public is perhaps not smart enough to understand the truth. And the result of that is that in polls that were asked of US voters before the election, who do you think will win? 70% of American voters believe that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And that to me is a very worrying result for democracy, because there's a chance that that could actually influence voter behaviour. People were being told while voter registration was closing, Hillary Clinton is pretty much a shoo-in to get the next presidency.
And that could certainly have an influence on the voter turnout, and a lot of, so you can influence the race that way by pushing people because of the poll. Let's get back to now government data. You're talking about the confidence with which polls are displayed and, mm-hmm. you know, down to the decimal point, and a pie chart, which looks like it's all done. And this is the official estimate of where we are in the moment. And you actually counter that by doing hand drawings, for instance. So tell us about the reason that you use hand drawings.
So it's for a number of reasons. One thing is that by the mere fact that you can tell that a human has kind of drawn this, I think it reminds someone that it's not some kind of objective computer science. Someone has been responsible for choosing which data to visualize and for actually making decisions about how to visualize it. Another reason why I chose to do the hand-drawn visualizations is because it feels kind of democratic. It's like, oh, if you wanted to replicate this at home, it's completely available to you. The use of paper also is actually really, really fun for figuring out new ways to communicate scale. So, for example, sometimes I'll have my hand in the drawing and you can see that if I'm saying this is the average height difference in a heterosexual couple and my hand is in there, then it helps people to visualize what that scale actually means.
Well, going back to the authority, though, of some of those polls, which shouldn't be presented as quite as authoritative as they are. I mean, when the Bureau of Labor Statistics presents its information, and then they tend to be reported that way by the press, looks awfully authoritative. Why don't we believe that just as well?
Well, they do publish a margin of error very frequently as well. And again, journalists will kind of set that aside and just publish the top line findings. And I think that actually what we need to do to get back to this idea of communicating a range is, you know, during the campaign, not only did then candidate Trump question the reliability of BLS statistics, but he actually threw out some alternatives. I think at one point he was saying maybe the unemployment rate is 25%, maybe it's 32%. And if we as journalists had said, listen, we don't actually think it's exactly 4.9%. We think it's somewhere between 4 and 6%. That immediately communicates to readers and listeners, well, listen, this is the bounds of accuracy in our minds. We don't know for sure it's 4.9%, but we really can rule out 30%. That's a completely different world. That's a completely different reality.
The other thing you point out is that we should be a little more discriminating and perhaps look a little more deeper into the numbers, that the average unemployment rate tells us very little, but looking at who is unemployed and how that's changed over time is more important, and that seldom gets reported.
Absolutely, and I think that's also affected people's trust with government data. So when only the averages get reported, when 4.9% as the unemployment rate gets reported, people who are genuinely living in parts of the country where the unemployment rate is much higher look around themselves and they say, well, more than 1 in 20 people I know is out of work right now. That number can't be right. And so, again, we as journalists have a role to break down those averages to show how they vary by geographic location, by gender, by age, by race, so that people can rebuild their relationship of trust with those numbers by seeing, oh, wait, that sounds more correct for where I live or who I am.
I wonder if this breakdown in trust doesn't tell us something about social order and political stability. If you think back to the Depression when FDR made the gamble that expanding democracy and making it more robust was the answer, not fascism or even communism. Totalitarianism wasn't the answer. Democracy could be saved by polling and by statistics. And that's where we see the beginnings of polling through the Roosevelt administration trying to make greater amount of input available, or first of all, information available, and then input to the government to govern better. And we had a solid middle class. And that gamble, at least in that run over a couple of decades, paid off. we no longer have that kind of trust. Does that tell us something about our stability or where we are?
Well, there's a couple of things I'd say to that. One is that trust has declined as the accuracy of polling has declined. So back then, America as a nation was far more, which word do I want to go with here? I don't want to say cohesive necessarily, but America looks very different to how it looks today. We have a far more fragmented society in terms of basic demographic variables. So the fragmentation of racial groups, of the way that people identify in terms of their sexual orientation or in terms of their marital status, you know, all of these things have radically changed. And before, to take a nationally representative sample of 1,000 people and claim that they represented all Americans was a lot easier to do than it is today. So that's one reason why things have changed. And the other thing that I might push back on a little bit is I don't necessarily think that polling was necessarily so tied up with the idea of good governance. Actually, polling has always been slightly driven by capitalistic interests of let's understand what the consumer wants. And I think those incentives are still there. And that's one of the reasons why actually we really need to protect government data sets where the incentives are different. The statisticians that work in government are federal employees. They don't work for a particular party. They're not motivated by financial interests. And that's one reason why those statistics are incredibly important for democracy and need to be protected.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us. Mona Chalabi, a data editor with Guardian US, recently gave a talk at North Carolina State. Thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Just ahead, we'll preview a conference at UNC Chapel Hill about the role of music in commemoration. On the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.